Hi everyone, and welcome back to Every Living Thing, your source for ideas surrounding animal welfare activism, sustainability, and heart-centered living. Today's episode is entitled Factory Farming, Hidden Genocide. Today I'll be discussing the unpleasant truths about industrialized farming, the truths we don't often consider when casually picking up a carton of eggs or a gallon of milk at the store. So today I want to start out by talking about some of the unpleasant truths about factory farming, and just there's so much that goes on behind the scenes in industrialized farming that we're just blissfully unaware of, largely when we're going grocery shopping for our meat, our eggs, our milk, our cheese that we all love. We're just not making the connection because it's out of sight, out of mind. So today I'm going to talk about the death toll of factory farming, the close quarters of the animals' conditions that breeds a lot of stress and disease. I'm going to talk about the practice of docking, antibiotic resistance, pandemics, hormones and pesticides, mistreatment of animals, environmental concerns, the separation of mothers and their young, and then what we can do about it. I also am going to discuss the definition of genocide, and I don't call factory farming hidden genocide lightly. I don't take that term lightly, and I think it's a different term than mass murder or mass suffering, and we're going to go into a little bit of the philosophy of genocide and how a lot of people in society think of genocide as perpetuating ills against humans, but I think that it can be extended to animals, and I'm going to pull from a paper that I read about this very issue and argue that the UN needs to revise its definition, its working definition of genocide in order to protect animals moving forward. I think that this could be a huge step in generating a sea change regarding raising and producing meat and exploiting animals. And we definitely need a sea change in order for society to broadly accept veganism and to move away from this unnecessary exploitation of animals for our survival. So first I want to talk about the death toll. Every year, factory farming results in 70 billion animal carcasses. Of those 70 billion, 10 billion are killed in the United States, and 99% of these animals were raised on factory farms. So that kind of just gives you a broad overview of the death toll we're dealing with, and I know a lot of people like to think that they're getting free-range eggs or sustainably raised meat, but as you can see by that 99% statistic, in all reality, these are probably mostly considered factory farms. And we'll talk about what free range actually means and how there isn't even a free range designation for a lot of species of animals, meaning that there's really no protections regarding the conditions and where they're kept in terms of them seeing light, having enough space to move about, versus being in metal cages. So we'll get into that. One of the biggest issues in factory farming, I believe, is the close quarters that all of the animals are kept in. So in this industrialized model, thousands of animals are kept close together with the goal of raising as many animals as possible, as quickly as possible, making them as meaty as possible, even if it restricts their movement and harms their hearts, all in the name of profit and reducing costs for consumers. So let's talk about supposedly free-range chickens. So if you buy eggs with the label free-range, this still means that 9 birds can be kept in 1 square meter of space. So if you kind of just imagine what 1 square meter means and picture 9 large chickens in that space, that's considered free-range. So you're probably picturing, you know, maybe on your egg carton, there's an image of chickens happily roaming through a large patch of grass. That's not really what free range means. So that's kind of just a marketing misnomer. The fact that these animals are kept so closely confined often causes neurotic behavior because the animals are overly stressed. It's an unnatural living conditions for them to live out their lives in this small area without free roam. And it's an often unclean environment because they're so closely packed. And then thinking about free range, there's no such designation for pork. So there's no free range pigs, which gives you an idea of the conditions of these pigs. Oftentimes they're kept in steel or metal cages, separated from each other, so they can't even keep each other company. They can't even move about. And if you think about it, this is just quite shocking because pigs are as intelligent as a 3-year-old child. So if you picture a bunch of preschool kids, that's basically what you're keeping confined to a cage. So let's see. Also, broiler chickens, so we're moving beyond free range, broiler chickens, which means chickens that are raised for meat, are kept 12 to 1 square meter. So moving from 9 to 1 square meter, which was your free range designation, to 12 per square meter. So not a lot of room. And this is not just for, you know, an hour a day or overnight. This is their entire lives that they're kept to this small space. And keep in mind that chickens are very territorial. They have hierarchies among their broods. So some chickens will block access to the outdoors. So even if these chickens are allowed to go outside and get sunlight, that doesn't mean that all of these chickens actually are being allowed out, because due to these hierarchies, some chickens will block certain chickens. So some never even see the outside. Battery chickens, which is another type of chicken, spend their entire existence standing on metal mesh floors and in the space of an iPad with no room to move about. So this is probably the worst of all of the categories. So these chickens can't even stand on dirt floors. They can't take dust baths, which chickens need to be able to do in order to live naturally. They can't walk about on grass. They're standing on metal, and if you picture an iPad in your lap, that's their entire life, that space. They'll never move around that. They can't stretch their limbs, they can't flap their wings, they can't feel sunlight, and they can't express any of their more natural behaviors. So this is going to cause excessive pecking of each other and of themselves, causing injury, and we'll get into how industrialized farms address that issue later through docking. So because all of these chickens and poultry in general are kept so closely, many of them develop respiratory infections or ammonia burns from urine due to their dirty enclosures. So these conditions are just really foul places for these birds to live. Moving on to dairy cows are typically kept inside their entire lives. So they don't come outside, they don't get to roam about in the grass, explore, feel the sun on themselves. And dairy cows, when allowed to explore outside, often gallop around. They like to play with balls. So if you just picture what they would be naturally doing to seek joy in their lives, and then picturing them confined inside, it's really quite heartbreaking. I'm just going to quote from One Green Planet. Quote, pigs love to bathe in the sun, snuffle in the mud, and create complex social relationships. Yet in factory farms, they are confined to tiny concrete pens for their entire lives. Chickens love to flap their wings and clean themselves in a dust bath. Yet they never leave a cage, which is so small. They cannot even stand up straight or extend their wings ever. Cows are very maternal creatures who enjoy grazing in fields, yet they are also confined to concrete pens where all they can do is sit or stand. End quote. So that kind of encapsulates all of these different factory farmed species existences, all in the name of profit. And again, with the pig example, these pigs are extremely intelligent. They're more intelligent than most dogs. Yet there's not even any free range designation for them. There's no such thing as that. So it's really quite sad. And adding to that quote, a lot of times poultry, such as turkeys, lose their ability to fly because they're selectively bred to gain more and more weight so that they can put on more meat fast. So more quickly developing meat and developing a body weight that is unnatural for them. So they can no longer support their own bodies walking around and flying around. So that's really quite sad. Next, I want to move into the practice of docking. In chicken and turkey farming, beaks are often removed as a response to excessive feather pecking among birds who are overly stressed or territorial in their environment. So like I was talking about, in keeping these broilers or battery chickens or even free-range chickens packed together, these chickens get highly stressed and they're trying to defend their own territory. So they'll peck each other or peck themselves. And so their beaks will be removed to avoid the damage caused by this pecking, and often without anesthetic. So it's an incredibly painful procedure, let alone removing this essential body part that allows chickens to express their natural behavior. So it's a very stressful procedure that just further damages them. Another example of docking is piglets' teeth being clipped and their tails cut off, and then also their testicles removed, often without anesthetic. And this is, again, to try to stop them from hurting each other or themselves when anxious. So just basically mutilating these animals to prevent them from exhibiting these neurotic behaviors, which is just kind of backwards. Next, I want to get into antibiotic resistance. And this is a big issue that developed when farmers started using heavy doses of antibiotics in their farm animals to help prevent some of the diseases that come with packing animals so closely together. So we talked about the respiratory infections, the ammonia burns. There's also bacterial diseases and pneumonia. So it's estimated that in keeping pigs in such a small space, 80% of pigs have pneumonia by the time they're taken to slaughter. So that just gives you kind of a picture of how rampant disease is in these conditions. So then, in an attempt to combat these bacterial diseases, these animals are pumped full of antibiotics. So that might be a great short-term solution, but over time, this has caused antibiotic resistance, which is then transferred to humans when humans are eating these animals. And at the end of the day, this leaves animals and humans at severe risk of antibiotic-resistant bacterial disease and zoonotic disease outbreaks. And if you're interested in this topic, I would recommend, it's a book I mentioned in my first episode. It's called Plucked by Maren McKenna, and it really goes into the history of antibiotic use among, especially in the poultry industry, and how this sort of band-aid solution spiraled into this antibiotic resistance and growth of these super bugs. So that leads me next into a hot topic, obviously, right now, which is pandemics. And I'm going to quote Farm Sanctuary, which is a national nonprofit committed to exposing the abuses of factory farming. So they say, quote, "The 2009 swine flu, H1N1, pandemic made its way across the world, killing an estimated 150,000 to 575,000 people. An earlier strain of the virus had been identified in U.S. factory farms in the 1990s and circulated through pig farms over the following decade before making the jump to humans. A combination of high-density animal confinement and poor regulation likely fostered an environment conducive to the spread of the virus," end quote. So these meat factories are really a breeding ground of these viruses that make the jump from species to species. And obviously, right now, we're witnessing the devastating impacts of a pandemic that is also believed to have originated in a meat market. And then, on a lower level, foodborne illness is a huge thing that's transferred from by eating animals. So by trending towards a vegan diet, we're drastically reducing our risk of foodborne illness, which sickens thousands of people every year. Next, I want to move into hormones and pesticides. So I talked about this a little bit earlier, but these industrialized farmed animals are given hormones to increase their rate of growth. And this often results in them increasing their size and growing up to 3 times faster than their natural rate of growth. So this means they typically reach full weight at 35 days only and then are killed. So if you're thinking, well, I eat animals, but only after they've lived out a happy life, I don't know that you would consider a month's worth of life a meaningful existence. And these hormones are also used to produce more flesh on each animal, which we talked about when thinking about the birds that can no longer fly or even walk, and whose hearts are stressed by this unnatural amount of weight. And this causes heart damage since the heart can't support their size and their limbs even give out and don't work anymore. For example, 90%, 9 out of 10 broiler chickens can't walk properly. So, just to produce more meat, we're robbing these chickens of their ability to even walk, which is just kind of sickening. And then, in terms of pesticides, animals are fed corn and wheat products that have been grown non-organically, so with pesticides. So these pesticides are then transferred to humans when we ingest and consume these animals. And obviously, pesticides have been shown to cause cancer and other illnesses. Next, I'm going to discuss the rampant mistreatment of animals that has been discovered behind the scenes in these factory farms. So, USDA investigations have exposed horrific treatment in slaughterhouses, including a case in Minnesota where 10,000 birds froze to death. So, a very painful death. And a lot of times we're thinking, okay, these animals, the least that we can do is kill them effectively and instantly so they don't need to suffer. But clearly, there are these cases of animals just being neglected and dying these slow, painful deaths. There's another case that the USDA discovered where chickens were mutilated by malfunctioning equipment. And there are other cases of workers intentionally hitting, kicking, and driving over live birds and tossing birds with broken legs and wings onto conveyor belts while they're still alive. Poultry are also submitted to forced molting, which is a process wherein they're starved and dehydrated and kept in darkness for 2 weeks straight to shock their bodies into molting. And the reason behind this is that their bodies are then tricked into laying eggs more often. So, again, just trying to make the process more and more expedient at the cost of these animals' well-being. And in this forced molting, 5 to 10% die in the process. And that just paints a picture of how hard this is on their bodies and how unnatural this is and how inhumane. And finally, another example of cruelty that is rampant in this industry, male chicks are often gassed or sent through a grinder alive because they're deemed financially worthless because they can't lay eggs. So just these sickening examples. And of course, there's the low grade, I shouldn't say low level, but more chronic abuses of just, as we've discussed, the unsanitary conditions, the lack of space, the lack of sunlight, the overweight bodies that the animals can't naturally support, the separation of animals so they can't create communities with themselves. So these are all just some of the atrocities. Next, I'd like to mention the environmental concerns of industrialized farming. So some things we don't often consider: factory farms are hazardous to surrounding areas due to the volume of waste produced by these animals, which has been shown to cause respiratory problems among humans, skin problems, and even depression among surrounding communities. And these communities are usually people of lower income who are forced to live nearby and work at the plants, often in inhospitable conditions and often dangerous conditions as well. It's estimated that 35,000 miles worth of rivers have been polluted by the waste products of these industrialized farming operations. So I wanted to briefly just touch on that. Next, I'm going to get into something that's really, really sad to think about, and it really just shows some of the emotional sides of these animals and individualizes this cruelty, I think. And that is the process of mothers and babies being separated in this industry. One of the most distressing things that happens to these animals is when their young is taken from them, because this is just such an important survival urge for them and provides meaning to their lives and the lives of their young. So in the dairy industry especially, calves are taken from their mothers almost immediately after birth so that the mother's milk can be harvested and sold. And then the male calves, since they won't be able to lactate ever, are sent to veal farms for slaughter. So this just shows you, you know, you might not think milk products are abusing animals, but by supporting the dairy industry, you're supporting the veal industry. So if you don't approve of baby animals being killed, then you can't morally support the dairy industry. And that's kind of why people say you really, you know, vegan is important and vegetarianism isn't enough. Mothers are kept in a cycle of insemination, gestation, and birth until they're too worn out from this exhaustive process. And obviously the reason for this continual process is to get as much milk out of each mother as possible. So after their bodies are exhausted, they're then sent to slaughter at what's known as a cull sale. So again, you can see that by consuming dairy, you're supporting the inhumane cycle and abuse of these mothers and also the veal industry. And then in the pork industry, piglets are taken from their mothers after only 2 weeks so that the mothers can be impregnated as soon as possible again. And an example of just the extreme drive of these mothers to care for their young, cows have been known to try to hide their babies because they know they're going to be taken from them. And the sobs and the squeals and screams have been reported as just these desperate calls and the mourning between the mothers and the babies. So that's just tragic to me. Next, I want to move into a fallacious justification of eating meat that's not factory farm. So you might be saying, well, I make sure I get my meat from non-factory farm sources, so I guess you're somehow finding the 1% of animals that are killed for meat and animal products that aren't part of factory farms. So you may say, I only eat animals that have had a good, happy life, that, you know, they've had room to roam, and maybe they have had room to roam, but I'm going to get into how short these animals' lives are. So it's not just lambs that are slaughtered as babies. Pigs are killed at less than a year old. They're usually about 6 months, but their natural life expectancy is up to 20 years. So that's them being able to live 1/40th of their natural lifespan. Cows are killed often at 6 months to 6 years, so any time during that range. They're aggressively bred to ensure milk supply, which we've talked about. They're usually culled after their third lactation cycle, but they're expected to live naturally to age 20 to 25. So again, a very, very short life. It's more profitable to replace the cow once its milk supply slows at all, which explains why these cows are culled after only their third lactation, so that there can be room and resources being poured into a cow that makes a little bit more milk. And then in the poultry industry, male chickens are killed at birth. We talked about them being thrown alive into grinders because they have no egg-laying ability. Female broiler chickens are killed at 3 months only, when they can live naturally to 10 years. So if chickens are being raised for meat, which is what a broiler is, they're living, 3 months. So that's a fourth of the year. And then they can live to 10 years. So that's, again, 1/40th of their natural lifespan. And then female chickens are killed after laying eggs for 1 to 2 years at the age of 3 to 5. So still only living a third to a half of what they could naturally live. And I think that's just eye-opening because I had no idea that these animals were, it wasn't just, you know, the veal industry. It was pigs, cows, and chickens being killed so young. I hope that by going over a couple of those subtopics that you have a clearer picture of some of the unpleasant ills of factory farming. And now I want to end on more of a positive note of what we can do to try to help the situation. So I would recommend going to PETA's website and going to their action items. And you can also download the PETA app, which makes it super easy. And whenever you have a spare minute, you can go onto it. I'm going to go onto it right now. And you fill in your email and your name, and it gives you just quick action items such as, let's see if I can find, just, let's see. Exposed again, crying lambs, flesh and tails cut and burned off, sheep beaten, etc. And you can click on them, and it'll give you a summary of the issue, and if it speaks to you, it'll give you the facts, and if it speaks to you, you can click take action, and it gives you a pre-drafted email with a subject line and with the appropriate person that you're imploring to take action, whether it's a representative, whether it's a company, and it gives you the email, and you can edit it and customize it however you want, or you can just send it as is. Click send, easy enough, it goes through, or maybe it's a petition to sign, but it just gives you quick little ways that you can help out in, you know, a minute or less. And then it'll update you too. There's one called Sephora is misleading customers about mink fur, take action now, and it's marked victory. So they'll circle back and let you know what came of their action items. And if enough people take part in these action items, it can really push companies to be more ethical. It can push lawmakers to take these issues seriously and advocate for animals. So it's really cool. And there's one on there too that says pledge to go vegan. So it's always a great day to go vegan. I hope some of these arguments have been convincing to you. So in addition to PETA's action items, you can also go to Farm Sanctuary, go to their website and click how to help. And then under that section, click take action. And on this site, you can take action to help end USDA bailouts of the meat industry. So the USDA has been bailing out the meat industry, as some of you know, because the meat industry has been suffering due to COVID-19 shutdowns. And Farm Sanctuary is working to get the USDA to reroute money to farms producing plant food. So that would be super awesome because I think we really need the government to help incentivize vegan and plant-based eating. So the idea is to incentivize this way of eating to help denormalize meat eating in our culture, to help our planet, global health, feed more people through more efficient use of resources, use water more efficiently, and to prevent future pandemics, which is huge. So let's hold our government accountable and let them know that we support these reroutings of the money. You can also sign a petition right now to urge the USDA to ban the slaughter of downed animals. So downed animals are those that are too weak or sick. So you can ask the USDA to ban slaughter of these animals. These animals are often left to suffer without food, water, or veterinary care because they're seen as carrying a death sentence. And they often carry bacteria that become foodborne illness as well. And then another action item Farm Sanctuary is working on right now is currently advocating for better treatment for free-range chickens. So with that label, they're trying to encourage more space, better conditions for these free-range chickens. So it's just a great website to just stay up to date on current issues and help support those issues. And then lastly, I just wanted to circle back to my subtitle, which is Hidden Genocide. So again, the episode is entitled Factory Farming, Hidden Genocide. And I want to talk about why I chose that title. So I was trying to think of a descriptor for what the factory farming industry truly is, and genocide popped into my mind. But then I was thinking, can you call non-human situations of abuse and mass death and social disruption genocide, or is that a strictly human term? So that kind of led me down a rabbit hole, and I ended up reading this paper by this woman named Kirsten Wald Koenig, and it's her thesis paper, and it goes into, so the title is Can Non-Humans Be Victims of Genocide? And it was just really illuminating and fit what I was trying to figure out very well. So I wanted to quote her a little bit and talk about how this term genocide, if we can expand its legal definition, how that could really carry some weight in ending factory farming. So in her paper, Wald Koenig draws heavily on the philosopher Claudia Card's work. And Claudia Card was a philosopher who worked on feminist philosophy and had a lot to say about a feminist definition of genocide that moves away from or expands upon the UN's current definition of genocide. So I'm quoting Wald Koenig here, quote, Card redefines intention broadly, noting that the harms of genocide can be the primary aim, a means to achieve a further aim, a foreseeable outcome, or a reasonably foreseeable outcome, even when it may not have been foreseen. Intention is an important element of genocide, but Card's recharacterization both focuses upon victims' experience and broadens the scope of intentional acts. Although not necessarily widely reliable, there is a widespread sense of what the violence of genocide entails, that groups of people are targeted for their identities and suffer the imposition of social death via violence against them, end quote. So quickly, I want to move over to how the United Nations currently defines genocide. So it says, in the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethical, racial, or religious group, such as A, killing members of the group, B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, and E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. So that's their definition, and it can be, to be considered genocide, it can be any one or multiple clause within that. So this legal definition focuses on a mental element, which is the intent to destroy in whole or part a national, ethical, racial, or religious group, and a physical element, which includes killing, causing serious harm, deliberately inflicting conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction, imposing measures intended to prevent births, or forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. So what Wald Koenig is arguing, she's basically using Claudia Card's definition, which defines intention more broadly, saying that intention can be considered there if the harm is a foreseeable outcome, is a reasonably foreseeable outcome. So in the case of factory farming, if it can be reasonably foreseen that these ills, these bodily harms, the killing, the forcibly transferring children, in this case, baby animals, then this can be considered genocide. And of course, genocide is commonly perpetrated by the state upon people, and that's how we think of it traditionally. If we think of the Holocaust and other, and the Rwandan genocide, we commonly think of it as inflicted upon people. But, quote, I'm quoting Wald Koenig again, Card does not express this component of genocide, instead identifying genocidal violence as systematic. An atrocity is genocide when it inflicts social death, even when that social death was not the primary or conscious intention of the perpetrated violence. But underneath this rationalization is a targeting of the victim group for who they are as a group rather than for what the group has done. For any instance of violence against human or non-human animals, there are three indicators of genocide. One, the social death of a group that is at least a reasonably foreseeable outcome of a harm. So again, that reasonably foreseeable outcome, not necessarily the explicit main goal. Two, that a group is not random, but targeted for their identity in the group, which is clearly the case in factory farming, and three, that the violence is systematic, structured and repeated violence perpetrated by another group in a position of power. And, end quote. So then, so the key part of the definition of Card's definition that Wald Koenig promotes is this social death of a group. And so then naysayers might say, well, how do we know if there's a social death among animals? Do we even know that they have societies? You know, how do we define that? So then Wald Koenig goes on to say, quote, by observing species members outside of these confinements, so I'm just going to explain what that means. So outside of the confinements of factory farming. So by observing the species in their natural ways of life, when they have room, when they can create relationships. So that's just my insert there. Jumping back into the quote, we can determine what social vitality looks like for healthy populations and analyze whether current practices render the animal socially dead. These animals are born into social death. So I'm inserting here, they're born into social death in the factory farming system. Okay, jumping back into the quote, just as Patterson explains that the children of human slaves born into social death. So she's connecting the condition of factory farmed animals to human slaves. Card's depiction of social vitality allows us to recognize that relationships and communal practices are central to identity constitution for group members. They recognize themselves within their kinship networks. So thinking about animals here, they definitely do recognize themselves within their kinship networks. Differentiating themselves from other members of their communities and recognizing their role in the group. These are evolutionary necessities, skills that ensure survival. Identity need not be defined as self-reflective capability or ability to abstractly define one's stations in life through category descriptions. Identity is placing oneself in relation to others. Meaning emerges from these interactions of individuals with each other. The social interaction between individuals of a group makes an individual's life positive, fulfilling, healthy, and whole. We need not necessitate that other species demonstrate meaning through the same lingual and semantic ways that is attributed to humans. By observing the behaviors of other species, we can understand how many species are socially adapted and that their cooperative practices contribute to their well-being. Humans are one of many such species who draw health benefits and purpose from our connections with one another. End quote. So that's a lot to kind of break down. It's a very dense scholarly paper, but I think it's extremely useful, and it's a really important point that Wald Koenig makes, that we don't need animals to fit into our human-centric definition of what a complex web of relationships means. We need to observe them. And by observing them in their natural state, we can see that they very much do create identity through their kinship networks, through their relationships. They have hierarchies just as humans do. And by placing them and breeding them within this factory farm system, we're robbing them of these social dynamics. And so we are creating a social death of their group, which is Claudia Card's definition of what genocide is. And I think the reason why Card's definition of genocide is so powerful is because it focuses on the experience of the genocide. It doesn't focus on the act itself, which is where the UN's definition runs into trouble, because the UN focuses on the explicit intent and the physical element, whereas Card focuses on the experience. And again, she talks about these victim groups, which could very well be extended to non-human animals. And I think that if the UN can revise their definition, that this could be very powerful in defending animals and breaking down the industrialized animal agricultural system. So I know it's a lot, but I think that we really need legal heft behind this in order to make the sea change that is necessary to get meat off the shelves, to get dairy off the shelves, to allow animals to live their social complex lives that they're meant to live. So that's just my idea on factory farming and how it truly is a genocide. And I want to close out with a quote that I just love. And I think it brings it back to the heart and to the moral side of the issue. And the quote is this: "Don't pray for mercy from what's above you when you show no mercy to what's under you." And it doesn't matter if you're religious or not. I think this can still carry weight. You can't expect people to treat you with mercy, governments to treat you with mercy, God or, you know, whatever you believe in to treat you with mercy or grant you mercy if you're not showing mercy to what's under you. So how are you treating those who you have power over? Are you being a steward of the earth for them, or are you exploiting them because you can? So the power is yours, and it has to come from the heart. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks so much for listening.